This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. This is the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Dave Ignatius standing by. You could actually see him on Skype shortly. And if you get the Fox News app, you just click on watch. You swipe over until you get Fox News Radio. We got a visual component to it. You also get it on Fox Nation. A little bit later this hour, Congressman David Kustoff will be with us out of Tennessee. And we'll be taking your calls. And you know where to find us. 1-866-408-7669. So before we get to Dave Ignatius, where you know today is a big State of the Union Day. A lot of things going on in Capitol Hill, too. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I can show you all the statistics in the world that say you should feel safe because the numbers are better. But you're the mom on the subway with your baby in a stroller. If you're anxious that I'm the governor of the state of New York, I'm concerned about it. And if you feel better walking past someone in a uniform to make sure that someone doesn't bring a knife or a gun on the subway, then that's exactly why I did it.
Well, how about getting rid of bail reform and adjusting that way instead of making me feel better by a guy in camouflage that should be at Home Depot? 180 on crime. Blue cities are now embracing conservatives' anti-crime measures. Why now? Could it be because there's an election? We'll dissect.
Number two.
You will hear the president lay out the historic achievements he has delivered. He's got more done in the first 3 years than most presidents have accomplished in two terms.
That's what they're going to be saying. State of the Union. Perhaps President Biden's last one tonight. The stakes are high and advice from all sides is pouring in. It might be the first time we'll be looking less for content and more for competence, delivery, slip-ups, and lip trips. We'll examine.
Number one.
He's shown he can be magnanimous. He's got a sense of humor. He's got to end the ad hominem. He's now our last chance to save the country. And he's got an obligation to all of us. And he has the ability to seek unity. I think he should even call up Nikki Haley.
That is Victor Davis Hanson, the historian. Rematch is set. Trump versus Biden. Trump needs money. Biden's popularity needs popularity, energy, and a good story to tell the people that people will believe. We're going to look at the game plans and the stakes. But let's go over to Dave Ignatius now with the Washington Post. You could also pre-order his book, Phantom Orbit, a thriller. He is a great writer, not only with his columns, but with his books and best-selling author. David, great to see you.
Great to be with you, Brian. Thanks.
All right, let's talk about world events if we can. Tonight, we're going to have the parents of hostages at the State of the Union today over in Israel. Everyone's talking about a possible ceasefire over in Israel, and the president's feeling heat from the Arabic, from the Muslim community, who are pushing him to be to push Israel back because they're using American weapons. What do you expect to hear tonight?
So I think, Brian, first, the theme of the hostage release, the hostage families in the audience is probably going to be the emotional center on foreign policy. President Biden has wanted more than anything to get a hostage release deal before the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which starts over this weekend, probably. Doesn't look to me like he's going to get that. So in a sense, he would have loved to announce that in the State of the Union. I think that's unlikely. I don't think we'll hear any surprises asking the president's advisors, what should we look for in the State of the Union on foreign policy? The same themes that we hear every week, pretty much, the importance of the war in Ukraine, the importance of getting military assistance to Ukraine. The president passionately believes in that, still hopes he can get a bipartisan deal in Congress. I'm sure he'll make that appeal to members of the House that are out there in the audience, and he'll look around the room and he'll say, can we really let our Ukrainian allies down? We've got Russia pushing hard. Folks, let's stand up behind that. I'm sure we'll hear that theme. I'm sure we'll hear discussion of the war in Gaza again. again, I think, from the president, an emotional support for Israel, but questions about the level of civilian casualties among Palestinians in Gaza. I'm sure he'll raise that. I don't think this is the moment when President Biden is ready to make a break with Israel. He is getting some discussion within the administration about the possibility of that. I don't think tonight we'll hear that decisive break happen.
Well, that'll be historic. Our chief ally outside the UK, and we leave them in a time of war after they were provoked with a horrific attack. Is it your belief that the Israelis will stop short of Rafah in any scenario? For example, if you really make it your objective to get rid of Hamas and they're there in Rafah and you have not been there, how could you possibly pull back now and tell the Israeli people, I have now kept you safer? It seems like you're just postponing the next attack.
So I think that this debate about whether now is the time for an all-out offensive on Rafah has been intense between the United States and Israel. Israel, as you say, Brian, says we got to finish the war. There are four battalions of Hamas left in Rafah. It's time to go after them. And the response from the administration, as I understand it, is we don't see a plan yet to take care of more than 1 million Palestinian refugees who've been pushed south into Rafah to make sure that they don't suffer unduly in this offensive. So I think the hope has been that the Rafah campaign would be postponed. Israel has signed on in principle to a 6-week delay in the fighting. The idea is they'd come back to Rafah after that, hopefully with good plans to protect Palestinians. The loss of civilian life in any war is something everybody wants to avoid, and I think that's at the center of this.
So, David, I talked to Benjamin Netanyahu 2 weeks ago. Was it 1 week ago? And he said he was briefed on a plan to provide a corridor for civilians to leave, and he's convinced it's a good plan. Was I being spun by a politician? Do your contacts say that was not a good plan?
Brian, I can't. Wasn't in your conversation, and I don't mean to. I just can't. Don't have the information to.
Okay.
To push back on that. What I do know is that officials in the administration, including members of our military, who've looked at the plans that Israel is offering, just come away unconvinced. They feel as if these are people who've often moved as many as four times, and the plans to safely get them out of Rafah, they don't see him yet. So, I think my simple answer would be if Netanyahu can explain as well to our Pentagon as he did to you what his plans are, maybe there'd be some progress here. But right now, I don't think so.
Okay. Why are we having such a hard time shutting down the Houthi rebels who have virtually shut down the Red Sea?
You know, that question is one that I struggle with. We're certainly firing a lot of ordnance at them every time they put a UAV up. We're sending ships in to take it out. There've been more than 200 attacks, and yet the Houthis keep coming. They're tough fighters. If we mean to really protect that shipping, we're going to have to step up the level of our attack, and I think step up the attacks on the supplies of the weapons and precursors the Houthis are using. This situation can't continue where they fire willy-nilly at commerce on a major seaway. You can't have that.
Yeah, I would say so. And by the way, we're speaking to Dave Ignatius. If you're not watching us, you could actually be seeing him. He's on Skype right now. Washington Post columnist. You can pre-order his book, Phantom Orbit, a Thriller, out on May 7th, which is my birthday. I don't know if that's a coincidence, but I fully support you releasing a book
on
my birthday.
Happy birthday, Brian. Happy birthday, man.
In May. Absolutely. I'll write the foreword next time, I promise. So David, I understand. I am firmly in support of supporting Ukraine, and I'm flabbergasted that Republicans are not. And I understand using leverage for the border, okay. But you got it. These people deserve our support. I understand the president's making a move to possibly repurpose $200 million from the defense budget. Is that real?
I think President Biden feels he needs to do everything possible. The repurposing of money, yes, I think it is real as an option. I think they're looking at everything they can to keep these folks in the field. You get this, but I want your listeners to think about the situation where you're under attack and you're having to ration the number of artillery shells you fire to protect yourself and the men and women around you, because you just don't have enough. And I do think we have an obligation to these folks. They're doing the fighting and dying, and all they're asking for is our help. I think they're thinking about repurposing additional aid. I think they're thinking about loans. I think they're thinking about a slimmed down package. I would bet, Brian, that some package of bipartisan aid, maybe not the original one, is going to get through the House. I just cannot believe in the end that Speaker Johnson and others won't vote for some version of this to keep these folks in the field.
David, no one has to remind you how hard it was towards the end for George W. Bush to get funding for the Iraq War. A lot of people, Senator Lugar and others, say, hey, listen, we're kind of done with this. I can't really support you on this. But he would be relentless. Dick Cheney would go on Meet the Press. Colin Powell would go out there. You know, Rumsfeld when he was in there. Gates at the end with the surge. You have to go out and advocate for your cause. For me, the best advocate for the Ukraine war was General Jack Keane and Senator Lindsey Graham, Kevin McCarthy. They were doing the best speaking. In a way, the president's responsible for the lack of momentum behind this. And the average American comes up to me because I don't even know why we're spending over there. When all you need is somebody just to walk us through where Ukraine is, what Russia's done in the past, how they're trying to reclaim the slowly but surely the Soviet Union, what he's really up to, how many casualties he's really had. But we don't have anybody out there explaining to the American people.
So I basically agree. I don't want to blame President Biden. I think he's working hard to do it in his way. I'd love to see a kind of roadshow out in America where people have doubts, and have people from both parties who just can say to citizens in Indiana, in Iowa, you know, all across the country, this is why this matters. This is why there's something at stake for us. Make that case passionately. But I basically am agreeing. More needs to be done. This is really a crucial hinge moment. And if this fails, we'll look back in 10 or 20
Absolutely.
Years and say, how on earth did we let this happen? So anything that can be done politically to build support ought to be done right now. I mean, you're speaking so forthrightly on your show. I think it's a big deal. I'm good for you for being straight up about it and telling your listeners why this matters.
I'm not asking even them to say to me, this is what I think will happen. They're already moving in Moldova. They have not left Georgia. They're starting to affect, if you talk to Lithuania, they're starting to affect their elections. Not everyone will be an invasion. Soon they're going to put their candidates up. They're going to affect outcomes on elections. They're going to start trying to intimidate their neighbors. Not everyone's going to be a flat-out Ukrainian-style invasion, especially after the lack of success they had. And I think it's time to stand up. I don't mind Europe getting a wake-up call to start building up their own defense. I have no problem with that. And, you know, they can't Germany to continue to be under 2% and France barely under 2%, but still they're not pulling their weight. Go ahead. Actually, get your wake-up call. We get it. Do what Poland's doing. I understand it. But would you also say, do you find it frustrating, the slow walking of weapons from the HIMARS? We're not going to give them. They get them. We even gave the UK gave their version of ATACMS. Then we give them Abrams tanks. First, we weren't going to give them Abrams tanks. Then we only give them a handful. And then the Patriot missiles, they're not going to get them. Now they have them. Imagine if we did this right away.
I think looking back, there's no question that we could have taken more risks in supplying assistance. There was a time, Brian, when our intelligence community thought the danger that Russia would use tactical nuclear weapons was real. And that was a time any president has to be careful when nuclear weapons are involved. But, you know, I think we could have done more. We should have done more. The fact that we didn't do as much as we could have back then is not a reason not to do as much as we can now. I mean, now is the moment. These folks, they're just dying in the field. They don't have weapons. You see the photographs of their racks where the
it's nuts.
The ammo should
Crazy.
Be. They're empty. They're empty.
Yeah, it is. And it looks like the Mrs. Zelensky, the First Lady of Ukraine, is not going to show up at the State of the Union. I don't know why, but we'll see. So, Dave, tell me a little bit about the book that's coming out.
So this is a book that's about something we're all beginning to think about, which is space weapons. Representative Mike Turner was so concerned Sure. about Russian weapons in space that he wanted the whole Congress briefed on it. It happens that subject's in the background of this novel. It's about some people who take enormous risks to try to make sure that the United States isn't blinded. Our eyes and ears are in space now, and the ability of an adversary to just take out our capabilities in war and peace is one of the most dangerous things that we face. And so it's a plot that's woven around that theme. It's called Phantom Orbit. And I hope that it looks toward, I won't say looks forward to, because it's a dreadful thought, but the reality is that space is now a domain of conflict, and people who really understand military affairs are spending more and more time thinking about space, thinking about the commercial part of space, the satellites that Elon Musk has that are broadcasting Starlink signals down that turn out to be a decisive factor in war for Ukraine. Those are all some of the themes in the book.
Yeah, you base it on fact. Much like Admiral Stavridis, they'll take their knowledge of war, take it against a war against China and tell you how it's going to come out. And then you do the same thing. You tap into your sources and you take a work of fiction, but you base it in fact. It's fascinating. Dave Ignatius, thanks so much. Appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Brian. Really appreciate it.
Okay, and we'll have a due celebration. You launch your book, and I'll celebrate my birthday. That'll be great. 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I think more than anything, what he needs is an identifiable and motivational narrative for the campaign. Campaigns, if you're privileged, you sit around and you talk about democracy. Right. I do. Right. But if you're sitting around the kitchen table and you're worried about your grocery bills, right, you're probably not talking about that. So he needs to bear down on the things that the American people are concerned about.
David Axelrod should come to Fox. He's just such a reasonable person. And that's why Joe Biden uses an expletive to describe David Axelrod, because he's hired to tell the truth, not to build him up. And that drives him crazy. But that's just it. And believe it or not, reportedly Bernie Sanders got to the White House, met with Joe Biden for over an hour, at which time the theme was, you can't keep telling people the economy's good if they don't feel that way, if prices are too high. You can't tell everyone the border is closed, you're doing everything possible when they see what's happened. In other words, talk about how you're cracking down on pharmaceutical when drug prices are too high. You can't tell them that you lowered them, but if people don't feel it, they're not going to care what you say about it. How Bernie Sanders, at 110 years old, has to tell an 82-year-old some of the fundamentals of politics, a little crazy. Maybe it's an oversimplification. I don't think so. So Jeff Zients, the chief of staff of the White House, says tonight, a State of the Union will focus on what Joe Biden says, the frustration. What he's trying to do is focus on the frustration he has with Congress to do something on the border, the focus he has on Congress to pass spending bills, which is true, by the way, and the frustration he has with Congress on financing the wars. But it's all related. So he's going to bring that up, and he's going to try to put it on Congress. Evidently, Speaker Johnson told everybody, no screaming, no heckling. So don't get drunk and yell things out, please. I actually 100% agree with him, because Nancy Pelosi did the worst thing ever, ripping up that speech. Worse than Joe Wilson saying you lie to Barack Obama. Worse than Marjorie Taylor Greene screaming out to Joe Biden last year. Just listen and leave. And then tell us your opinion. Katie Britt will have the rebuttal. That'll be interesting, too. Coming up next, David Kustoff on so much more. Ways and Means Committee, spending and everything else.
radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You will hear the president lay out the historic achievements he has delivered on for the American people and his vision for the future. Looking at what President Biden faced when he came into office and where we are now, it is clear he's gotten more done in the first 3 years than most presidents have accomplished in two terms.
Okay. She likes the infrastructure bill. She likes the rescue plan. She likes the Inflation Reduction Act. The rescue plan, as Larry Summers says, was totally unnecessary. He was able to jam a whole bunch of money down our throats that we didn't have, that we had to print up, after we've already put sufficient amount of money from the pandemic into a system while trying to figure out everything out. He already had a vaccine. He overstepped his authority, as I see it, with all these mandates and the shaming of people further dividing. With the infrastructure bill, almost and nothing's been done yet. Remember, Barack Obama says there's no such thing as a shovel-ready project. He told us everything was shovel-ready. They weren't. And then when you have the Inflation Reduction Act, he mocked us, saying, yeah, it really doesn't affect inflation. That was an agenda item. With gun control, yeah, he did it. And he had brought Republicans along with it. That was generated from the Senate, and a lot of people were mad at Senator Cornyn for leading that effort. But from here on in, American people are making their own judgments. And we'll see. It's going to be a consequential year and a consequential State of the Union tonight. Joining us now to discuss it is Congressman David Kustoff of Tennessee. He's also on the Ways and Means Committee. We're trying to get a spending bill passed, all the appropriations bills out, and one of two Jewish Republicans in Congress. Congressman, welcome.
Hey, Brian. Good morning. Thank you for having me this morning.
First off, can I ask you about the spending bill? I mean, I heard you have 10 of 12 appropriation bills done. Does that play a role into funding the government?
Well, so yesterday we voted on 6 of the 12, and we've got 6 that are remaining that my guess is because the deadline on those come up March 22nd, will probably be voted on, Brian, not next week, but the week after. This is the, kind of the kick the can down the road from September the 30th, because the government should have been funded October the 1st. We tried to do that, and unfortunately our speaker was removed, I think wrongfully removed.
And of
that,
course.
That set us back, very candidly, that set us back some period of time until the new speaker was in place and built his staff. But the fact of the matter is, we need to get these spending bills done. We had some wins, frankly, in the appropriation bills that were passed yesterday. And they still need to be passed by the Senate, which presumably will be done today or tomorrow, but we need to get this out of the way and focus on the nation's business.
In retrospect, do you think those congresspeople that led by Matt Gaetz knew how stupid and how drawn out and how detrimental their move was going to be?
Well, Brian, I don't know. I think when you want to execute a plan, you need to know what steps B, C, D, and E are, down to Z, and I can't answer that. I just think that, at the beginning of the year, we all know that we went through 15 rounds of electing a speaker. We shouldn't have had to do that. We should have been able to do that on the first try. The Democrats do that. We selected our speaker. We selected our majority leader. We had all of our leaders in place, and people elected us in November of 22 to do the people's business. And with Speaker McCarthy, I frankly think he had a pretty good 8, 9, 10 months until he was ousted. But the fact of the matter is we are where we are, and we've got a good man. Mike Johnson is the speaker now. He's conservative, he's smart, he's thoughtful, and I think he's playing his hand about as well as he can, considering that his poker playmates are Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer.
So before we talk about the State of the Union tonight, let's talk about the matchup between Biden and Trump. Yesterday, Mitch McConnell, Governor Youngkin, Senator Joni Ernst, some holdouts said, no, I'm all in. I'm fully backing President Trump. And now after that Super Tuesday where he won 14 of 15 states and Nikki Haley bows out, and you see the former president winning in every poll. This is what Andrea Mitchell said on MSNBC, Cut 9.
That result leading me to think maybe that 5-point spread in the New York Times poll and our poll and the head-to-head matchup is not quite accurate. Maybe the enthusiasm for Joe Biden is, as their campaign has been claiming, bigger than we think once it was a binary choice.
Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's wishful thinking on her part. You know, I learned a long time ago, you don't shoot the messenger. You know, you accept the news the way it is, good, bad. The numbers that Andrea Mitchell was citing, these numbers showing Trump in the lead in the general election and in the states, frankly, that
matter.
These handful of states, all these polls are consistent. And for whatever it's worth, subjectively, you know, you're out and around the country. I'm certainly out and around Tennessee. I know what people are saying. I know what their concerns are. They don't feel good about the country. When people don't feel good about the country and the direction it's heading, that always reflects back to who the commander-in-chief is. So it makes perfect sense why the numbers favor Trump over Biden. People blame Biden for where we are on the border, where we are economically, for our standing in the world, and they have pretty good memories of the Trump years pre-COVID and even during COVID.
So let's talk about Israel aid. I'm all for the leverage needed at the border to get the aid to Ukraine and Israel, but now that the border bill is not something Republicans want to support. What happens to Ukraine and Israel? What about the aid that they need and Taiwan needs?
Well, in the House, you know, we've had two votes solely on Israel aid. We had a vote a week or two after Speaker Johnson became Speaker, I believe in early November, that it was $14 billion appropriated for Israel. We took back $14 billion that Pelosi had appropriated under the Inflation Reduction Act for the IRS that was in a pot that hadn't been spent. Chuck Schumer could have called that bill up, still could call that bill up any time, and it would pass. He didn't. We took another vote in the House a few weeks ago, $17+ billion in aid for Israel. Biden said if it passed, he would veto it, and Hakeem Jeffries whipped his members against voting for that aid for Israel. So the aid for Israel, I think, is pretty easy both in the House and in the Senate, and I think that we ought to vote on those separately. Now, I understand what the Senate did, and they have teared up Israel, Ukraine, Taiwan. That's a decision that the Speaker of the House has to make, whether that comes up for a vote. But I would say right now it's pretty easy. Let's go ahead and pass Israel. On Ukraine, though, because you asked, and I have voted. We've had X number of funding votes for Ukraine, and I have voted for Ukraine funding in the past. I'm not sure I've voted every time for the funding, but for the big bills, I have. You know, we all have to go back to our districts and tell our voters why we did something or why we didn't do something. And to me, if the administration is serious about wanting Ukraine aid to pass, they need to get the senators and the congressmen in a room with the Secretary of Defense, the Director of National Intelligence, the Secretary of State, and say, ladies and gentlemen, if you vote for or pass blank amount of money for Ukraine, this is what we expect the end result will be. We expect Ukraine will win, whatever that means, or what have you. They don't do that, Brian, and instead they come and say we need $60 billion in money for Ukraine. And in the back of my mind, I know if that comes up for a vote, they're likely going to come back 2 or 3 months later and ask for additional money. They've got to give some justification of what that money is going to be used for and what they think the result will be, so that we've got a good basis to vote for it or against it.
Yeah, well, you could do that. You could seek it out, but they can't lose, and they fight like warriors. And the Russia is clearly our enemy that wants to reestablish dominance over Eastern Europe. And if we let them go here, goodbye Moldova, goodbye the rest of Georgia. The Baltic Nates already feel as though they're being exploited. And who knows, one by one, they could be invaded. And then they're going to be treaty obligated to get involved. They should be explaining that. Whatever you want to say about George W. Bush in Iraq, he was always explaining that. Dick Cheney was always explaining it. Rumsfeld and Colin Powell and Gates were always, this is what we're doing. This is what we hope to do. And people were against it. They were for it. Republicans would bail, but they were out there pushing it. This administration doesn't talk to anybody. They don't talk to the press. They don't talk to Congress. I don't know if they talk to each other. The Secretary of Defense was in the hospital, and no one even knew it, and no one seemed to care. So in terms of Israel tonight, we understand some hostage families are going to be there. Are you concerned of the pro-Hamas wing in the Democratic Party?
I am, Brian. I'm very concerned about these members of Congress that do support these terrorist groups and terrorist organizations. And we've had at least one member of Congress that has led some of these people through the halls of Congress and through these office buildings in Washington, D.C. It is concerning because here's the thing. I realize when I speak on the House floor, I speak anywhere. I've got an outsized voice. I'm speaking for 770,000 people. Those people who speak, not only does the rest of the country pay attention to them, but the rest of the world and our enemies and the enemies of Israel and the enemies of freedom hear those people too, and it gives them some hope and some solace. So, I'll initially give President Biden credit when it appeared that he stood strong with Israel. Lately, when he calls for, he went on some late night show a week and a half or 2 weeks ago and said that he thought that there would be a ceasefire on Monday.
It's crazy.
There's not a ceasefire.
While eating ice cream.
While eating ice cream. Here, the issue is we had a ceasefire until October the 7th, and on that day, Hamas violated that ceasefire and killed 1,200 Jewish people, which is more Jewish people that have been killed on any single day since the Holocaust. And so we could have a ceasefire today if Hamas would release all the hostages and just say, we surrender, it's over.
Right.
That's the way to get it done. But Biden feels like he has to vacillate and placate to the left because he's seen in these primary states that the uncommitted vote that these pro-Hamas members of Congress have urged their members to or urged their constituents to vote for has been a pretty strong and sizable number in some of these states. And so Biden has to come off what may have been his principles and vacillate.
Congressman David Custo. Yeah, David, we only have a couple more minutes real quick. Congressman, you know that Benny Gantz came here. He's going to be the future prime minister when Netanyahu is done, probably if they call a vote. He was here. So it looks like the government is somewhat fracturing. Do you believe that this administration is trying to break, trying to get away from Netanyahu, trying to deal with Benny Gantz because they feel as though they can't deal with him?
Well, we know the fraction and the friction between President Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu. So it would not surprise me. I think that our government, the totality of our government, needs to stand strongly behind Prime Minister Netanyahu and the state of Israel. The Israeli people need to see that from our government.
Absolutely. So you're going to be in the room tonight?
I will be at the State of the Union. I'm going to listen. I'm not going to jeer. I'm not going to boo. I'm going to listen to what he's got to say, and we're not going to learn anything new that we don't know beforehand. If he's not asking for my political advice, but if I were him, I would take ownership of all these problems. He cannot stand up and say the State of the Union is good because it's not.
Yeah, you can't blame. It would be good to be a leader, but it's a political season. Congressman David Kostoff, thanks so much.
Brian, thank you very much.
You got it. When we come back, your chance to talk. And if you'd rather write me, you could do that. BrianKilmeade.com. Click on comments. It'll go right to my email. Brian Kilmeade.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Yeah, well, I'm already beating both President Trump and President Biden among independents, which is the largest cohort. Now, independents are now 52% of the American voting public. This is the first election in history where independents have outnumbered Republicans and Democrats. I'm beating both President Biden and President Trump in young people, people under 35, in the battleground states against among all people under 45. I'm tying President Biden with Hispanic voters and beating President Trump by 10 points. All of the only cohort where I'm losing on are baby boomers.
So RFK is going to be such a factor if he goes to the Libertarian Party. Right now, I think he's only in Utah, maybe a couple more. Last time I checked, I don't think that No Labels was on more than 9 states, Democrats for the most part, more than Republicans, making it almost impossible to clear these hurdles. But if he goes on the Libertarian ticket, he's on all 50 states. Imagine being a factor in all 50 states. Let's say he's going to get at least 5% in a lot of these places. And that's without, I mean, they're going to go after him, both sides. I think both sides see him as a threat. There's no way he is not a factor. There is no way. So Donald Trump, people can't believe it, has got the nomination, Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, and others. Is he a better candidate now? Yes. Does he have a better team? Absolutely. Do many of the things that he ran on and worked on in the past now front and center make him look better? Yes. You got to be a little lucky and fortunate and perceptive. And now the issues that he ran on in 2016 are even more applicable today. Tough on crime overall. Now the whole country's flipping. Oregon, Washington, New York, a move from the White House to make to urge law enforcement to cooperate with ICE, to build a wall. You hear anyone pushing back on a wall? Not money at all. Illegal immigrants, factor? You don't need me to go over that again. Here's Alex Castellanos, a Republican media consultant. Cut 6.
I don't know that that she wants anything except maybe long-term political viability in the Republican Party. And I think Trump is going to wait to see a bended knee, Nikki Haley, come to him and say, you know, hey, you lost, you go first. But at the end of the day, I do think the party comes together because of that, you know, the threat to the country, not because of the inside politics here between these candidates.
Because as Alex points out, I don't think Trump can win without the Haley supporters. You don't want to alienate them. No more bird brain, no more negativity. He's got Mitch McConnell, he's got Joni Ernst, he's got Governor Glenn Youngkin. I think in a few weeks, you might see something with Nikki Haley. But right now, everything's pretty raw. She wanted to win, no question about it.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, 48th and 6th, where I understand this is going to be a place where there's going to be a lot of National Guardsmen in camouflage because suddenly we realize crime's a problem in the subways. I had no idea, even though I take the subway every day and we see it nonstop. This hour, we're going to be talking to Thomas Kenneth, an attorney of Razor and Kenneth. What makes him so important? He represents Danny Penny, the retired Marine who had to take things into his own hand when a crazy-ass homeless person started threatening people on a subway train. He put him in a restraining hold. Sadly, the person ended up dying but was on drugs too. So now they're putting down. Now they see a problem. Can you imagine if they actually had law enforcement on that subway that day? And we're also going to be joined by Governor Kristi Noem in a matter of moments. But first, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I can show you all the statistics in the world that say you should feel safe because the numbers are better. But you're the mom on the subway with your baby in a stroller. If you're anxious that I'm the governor of the state of New York, I'm concerned about it. And if you feel better walking past someone in a uniform to make sure that someone doesn't bring a knife or a gun on the subway, then that's exactly why I did it.
So nothing really sincere about it. And if you really cared about us, governor, you'd get rid of bail reform. But you stand in the way all the time. Blue cities are now embracing conservative anti-crime measures from Washington, D.C., even over to Oregon. Why now? Could it be an election?
Number two.
You will hear the president lay out the historic achievements he has delivered. He's got more done in the first 3 years than most presidents have accomplished in two terms.
I know that's what they're going to say, but do you believe it? State of the Union, perhaps. But tonight, President Biden's last. The stakes are high. He gets advice from all ends. Will the Republicans be screaming out this time, even though the speaker does not want them to? I know this speaker will show more class than Nancy Pelosi and will not tear up anything that Joe Biden hands him.
Number one.
He's shown he can be magnanimous. He's got a sense of humor. He's got to end the ad hominem. He's now our last chance to save the country. And he's got an obligation to all of us. And he has the ability to seek unity. I think he should even call up Nikki Haley.
Victor Davis Hanson, a historian who knows the president and other presidents, and that he gives his very valuable advice. The rematch is set. Trump versus Biden. Trump needs money. Biden needs popularity, energy, and a good story to tell the people that they will believe. We look at the game plans and stakes right now with Governor Kristi Noem, one of the first politicians to hop on the president's bandwagon when he came out of nowhere to win the election in 2016 and try to keep it in 2020. Governor, welcome.
Well, thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
So compare Trump now, from what you remember, I don't know if you were in the House back then, to 2016, to what you see now for the president as he tries to get his job back. As yesterday, we get Mitch McConnell, Senator Joni Ernst, Governor Youngkin all get behind him.
Well, I think back in 2016, a lot of people wrote him off. In fact, I remember during that campaign, I was the only statewide elected official in South Dakota that supported him. And we had a lot of Republicans in office, but I was the only one and the only woman that supported him and thought he was a man who would come to Washington, D.C. and clean things up. I was serving in Congress at the time. I would say now people realize and politicians realize that he means what he says and that he'll actually do it. And that's why more of them this time around are supporting him. You know, maybe they took him a little longer than it should have. I think the president should remember that, but also unite people. And he's been doing that in his speeches. He's been displaying incredible leadership. I hope that the rest of the elected officials in the Republican and the Democratic Party can start to do the same thing and recognize that we gotta fix this country. We are on the verge of losing it.
Well, I mean, between the border, the crime, they're realizing they got a huge problem. Do Democrats come for this election? Because the whole bail reform is not just a New York thing. It's a Philadelphia thing. It's a Chicago thing. Oregon, San Francisco, Los Angeles. The state of Oregon is now realizing their open drug dens are not a positive. In Washington, D.C., they're beginning to crack down on crime. And now you have an urging from the White House for local law enforcement to get along with ICE. Is there sincerity with this?
No. But I would just say that it's interesting to see people speak out that have never spoken out before. The general population that's been pretty quiet and intolerant up until this point. In fact, in a lot of these swing states, they elected their very liberal socialist Democrat governors that shut them down during COVID and took away their businesses and all of their constitutional rights, and they reelected them. So I would say that now these states, people are realizing those governors are still in place. Wait a minute. It's getting much worse. I have to speak out now. This is not a time to be quiet and say the status quo is good enough, that it actually can get worse than it was in 2021. And we're seeing it today. That's why we got to make sure that we're talking about Donald Trump and the fact that he really is the only one that gets out of bed every day and thinks about the people first. He doesn't think about himself first.
So the goal for Joe Biden, they say, is to go for the jugular every day. He said, point out some of the outlandish things the former president has said and try to get under his skin. Do you think I know you talk to the former president a lot. Does he understand what's coming at him?
He does. He absolutely does. And I think that is the Democrats' playbook. They're going to use social issues and they're going to use words that he said in the past or things that have happened in the past to try to make him angry. And what I've told the president is he needs to keep a few fighters around him. He needs to keep a few people around him that fight for him every day so he can just relax and be the candidate. He can just relax and be the president, talk about his policies, his successes, what he's going to do, and let other people fight his battles because he's got a lot of support out here and a lot of people that have opportunities to fight for him and can push back on all the lies that the Democrats are pushing.
I want you to hear what Nikki Haley said yesterday. Cut one.
I have always been a conservative Republican. and always supported the Republican nominee. But on this question, as she did on so many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, quote, never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind. It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that.
How did that message resonate? I know what he put on Truth Social after. How do you get the Haley voters and how do you describe them?
Well, number one, first of all, Nikki Haley just proved that she is not a leader, that what she is doing by making that statement and by using that quote in a totally different context and out of place and inappropriately, because Margaret Thatcher was 10 times the woman that Nikki Haley was. But by her using it there, she proved to all of us that she should never be president of the United States. But what I would say is that, yes, Donald Trump is going to unite this country, and he's going to do it by helping families keep more money in their pockets and have more of their freedoms. I think the fact that she is actually giving Joe Biden and the Democrat Socialists a foothold by making that statement is not just irresponsible, it's disrespectful. It's disrespectful, and I don't think that she has any place in leadership in the future
government. Well, her quote was, never follow the crowd, always make up your own mind.
I agree with that. But what are our choices right now, Brian? I mean, she's making up her own mind by saying that.
Okay.
She's making up her own mind that it is Joe Biden or Donald Trump, and that she is not going to say what her own mind is. Therefore, she's not going to be transparent and be bold enough to tell people why she supports who she supports. She's sitting on the sidelines when we have the most important election that I've seen in my lifetime. I don't know about hers.
So, Governor, right now there's huge push in this country. I find unbelievably disturbing. And the rioters are going after the squad and everybody else. They're interrupting Adam Schiff's victory press conference. He's a left-wing Democrat. Chris, you can't get more left-wing than AOC. And she's trying to go to the movies and they're harassing her. They interrupt Joe Biden's speeches. And I'm talking about this pro-Hamas, this ceasefire crowd that doesn't seem to recognize that Israel, there's a reason why Israel's in Gaza. Have you made sense of this? Did you compare it to any other movement that you remember? They're actually targeting the liberals for not being liberal and left-wing enough.
Well, I don't remember a terrorist organization being this organized in the United States of America through a messaging and infiltration campaign into our communications. That's what's interesting to me is that by allowing a few of these leaders to walk this rope of supporting Hamas has allowed them to infiltrate the consciousness of Americans and normalize the conversation. This is one of the examples I use all the time, Brian, of why TikTok is so dangerous, is because it's controlled by the Chinese and it can change people's minds and perceptions of situations and mislead them down false truths. And what they have done is use TikTok as a tool to convince people that what happened on October 7th was maybe justified, and it absolutely was not. It was a terrorist attack where Hamas has just decided to exterminate the Jewish people. That is the truth, and history has proven it out. But by using social media, they have used that to make sure that this terrorist organization has a foothold here in America. And they're not just going after conservatives. They're not just going after Republicans. They're going after Democrats. They're going after every single person that will stand and be elected into an office in America because they hate America. They hate America, and if they can destroy all of us, then that's when they're successful.
So, Governor, I know you were in Washington for a while, and then you've been running your state. What kind of dog is that, by the way?
It is my Vizsla dog. I don't know what got into him, but he's chatting this morning with you as well.
Yeah, I know. When I do my calls from home, I have two Great Pyrenees. I always seem to bark while I'm on the phone. But I totally understand it. Governor, how would you be reluctant to go back to Washington?
Well, I sure don't like that place. You know, I go back once in a while to testify at committees. I think I'll be there next week testifying in front of a few committees and stuff. But I think every American right now needs to look at themselves and say, what can I do that will make a difference? So I want President Trump to win. I'll do whatever I need to do just to make sure that he wins and he gets back in the White House.
I've not seen a short list without your name on it. Have you spoken to the president, the former president, about this?
Well, we had a long conversation, but Brian, I don't usually talk about my conversations with the president. I consider him a friend, and he's a good man, and you know, he'll pick the right person that will help him win. And I told him that no matter what, his policies worked for my people here in South Dakota. I love my job in South Dakota, but I will do whatever he wants me to do to carry his message and his policies forward.
So whether it's vice president or something else, you'd be in.
Well, I mean, I told him I'd help him win. I think that I don't know what all, you know, he would ask me to do, but it is something that it's that important to me and to my family that we think that we really need to make sure we kick out Joe Biden real soon, or else my little granddaughter, my little grandson are not going to have a future.
Understood. If you were to talk about, in other words, you've talked to him about the president, about policy, everything. You're in mm-hmm. regular conversation.
Well, you know, when he ran in 2016, I was in Congress, and then I ran for governor in 2018. He came to South Dakota and helped me, but I got the chance in Congress for 2 years to work with him on tax reform. You know, I only ran for office because of tax policy. I was passionate about it because we almost lost our family business to bad tax policy. So the fact that he came to Washington, D.C. to reform our tax code was just right where my heart was. And we spent 2 years working on a bill that we passed to put more money in people's pockets. And I had the chance to work on national security issues on the Armed Services Committee with him. So that's all what most of our conversations have been over the years, was about our families and policy. And he's extremely articulate. And there's never been a time that we've had a conversation where he hasn't sat there and taken my opinions and my thoughts into consideration and actually helped me to do what I could do my job as a congresswoman and as a governor. And as I tell people, the greatest gift that President Trump ever gave me was that he allowed me to do my job. Is that if there was a different president that was a Democrat in there, they would have tried to tell me how to do my job in my state. President Trump let me do my job in my state to do what was best for my people, and we're thriving. We are breaking all kinds of historic revenue records, savings records, paying off debt. Our kids are more successful. Overdoses are going down. I mean, what South Dakota is doing is incredible, and it's because he allowed us to do our job and take care of our own people here.
And you'll get the fireworks show back on the 4th of July if he wins.
We will when he comes back in the White House. Joe Biden took him away again, a little bugger. So there's absolutely no reason not to allow us to celebrate our independence at that great monument. But these Democrats, apparently, they either don't like Mount Rushmore, they don't like America. I can't figure out which.
Governor Kristi Noem, thanks so much. On the president's shortlist to be a running mate, which I'm sure he'll take his time in announcing, because he likes to create the drama or drag out the mm-hmm. drama if you've watched him in action. Governor, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian. Have a wonderful day.
You got it. When we come back, I see your calls up there. I'll get to them, 1-866-408-7669. Or you can write me, briankilmeade.com. Quick note. On April 27th, I'm going to be in Henderson, Nevada, right outside Las Vegas, talking about history, liberty, and laughs on stage, unscripted. There is some format to it, but it is so much fun. VIP opportunities remain. Go to briankilmeade.com, and I will see you there.
On the road to 2024.
They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. There's never been anything so conclusive.
Trump is the presumptive nominee.
Rematch 2024 is on Trump.
But it's all going to work out. We're going to come out so good. I'm more popular than I ever was.
Biden.
Well, I'll
Democracy 24. Right here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back with some phone calls right now. Jordan Peterson testifying on Capitol Hill. We'll pull some of that back. I think he's going after the Canadian government for going after those truckers and just going into their bank account and taking their money. Do you believe that? Remember the truckers and the vaccine over in Canada? Canada, I don't know what's gone with them, but stay away. Jack in Florida. Hey, Jack.
Yeah, Brian, I have a real dilemma. I know of a case of elder abuse, and this is what's going on. There's a very old guy, he can barely walk, he fumbles over his speech, he can't function. And his family and other friends are forcing him to stay in a job that he's not suited for because they like the prestige and the benefits of his employment. What do I do?
Well, it's a good point, and it's just a hypothetical, Jack, right? Because I don't have anything to refer this situation to. But what I would do is give him 8 more months and then get the majority of the family to vote. And if that majority of the family votes, then he's got to leave on November 7th. Thanks so much. David in Troy, Ohio. Hey, David.
Hey, Brian.
Well, who's your choice? You want to talk about the VP pick?
Yeah, I was wondering what you would think about Donald Trump picking RFK as vice president.
Evidently, he's off the list, so it's not even worth talking about. They said that he was being considered, and Trump immediately kicked that to the curb. He does find him intriguing, though. And, of course, anybody born in that era, and you have a Kennedy that links to that magical era of RFK, JFK, and the rise of the Kennedys. JFK Jr. was a friend of Trump's. So I think he's got something for that. I would not be that surprised if Trump wins and RFK being a part of it, but not as a running mate. Walter in Louisiana. Hey, Walter.
Morning. I would like to point out that Joe Biden did not lower the prices of medical bills. When Donald Trump, in his last year in office, he got the diabetes people to lower their prices. When I'm a diabetic, and then when Biden came in office, the first thing he did was throw that in the trash. Now he's saying, "I'm the guy who did this." This guy.
But
just
you're saying
lied.
Trump lowered the price of insulin.
Point across.
You're saying that you're saying that Trump lowered the price of insulin, not Joe Biden.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll look into that, Walter. Thank you. And I'm glad you're persevering with the diabetes. When we come back, we talk to Tom Kniff, an attorney for Danny Penny.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I want to send reinforcements to the mayor of New York, who has primary responsibility for policing the subways. But all of us know who've been on the subways. The subways are vast. And we have seen a number of crimes, again, not statistically significant, but psychologically significant. And I want more people to go on the subway. I can show you all the statistics in the world that say you should feel safe because the numbers are better. But you're the mom on the subway with your baby in a stroller. You're the parent putting your kid on the subway to go to high school. You're that senior citizen going to a doctor appointment. If you're anxious that I'm the governor of the state of New York, I'm concerned about it. And if you feel better walking past someone in a uniform to make sure that someone doesn't bring a knife or a gun on the subway, then that's exactly why I did it. I want to change the psychology around crime in New York City because we are the safest big city in America. I want people on the subways. It is safe, but I'm going to make sure people feel safe.
What a joke. So if you're a mental patient and you have some type of mental illness and a misperception of reality, then I'll put people in camouflage next to you and pull them out of their normal jobs to go into the national, to serve on the National Guard. She wants to know this stat. Mayor Adams announced on Tuesday that he's putting more police patrolling the subways because subway crime has risen 20%. So it's not a perception, it's a reality. Joining us now is Thomas Kniff. He's an attorney at Razor and Kniff and represents Danny Penny, the former Marine that saved everybody in a subway car because he was able to put this would-be assailant in a submission hold. But sadly, because of the drugs he was on, he ended up losing his life. And now Danny Penny has to fight for his freedom. Tom, welcome back. Your response first about the governor's move.
Well, I would just say, Brian, that I wish someone would have had this catharsis about a year earlier.
Yeah.
Because maybe my client then wouldn't have been in the situation of having to step in to protect himself and his fellow passengers from unhinged Jordan Neely. So I don't know if, you know, better late than never is the appropriate response, but it's about all that comes to mind right now for me.
She spoke about Danny Penny, too, in the past. Now she wants to make everyone feel better about it. Instead of saluting a good Samaritan for stepping up and noting the tragedy and how it ended, Alvin Bragg is trying to lock your guy up. But listen to what she said about Danny Penny in the past.
I do want to acknowledge how horrific it was to view a video of Jordan Neely being killed for being a passenger on our subway trains. I don't care about labeling it. Just looking at that video, you know it's wrong. No one has the right to take the life of another person. And now even our conductor's booths will now have cameras in there because we don't know who the perpetrator is of the person who slit the neck of a conductor just a week and a half ago. I talked to the doctor who saved his life. What a great guy to be on the train and go save the life of a conductor.
Do you see her change in attitude? Because the conductor leaned out his head and got slitted by got her neck slit. and now she's to talk about your client that way. What an idiot.
Well, it's a change of attitude. I'll just add that, you know, it's completely inappropriate. I made this point a couple times before, and I've been serving in the JAG Corps, and I'm a former active duty JAG and still serving in the National Guard JAG Corps. And in the military, we have something called unlawful command influence, meaning that, you know, if a general officer or commander comments on a pending military investigation or case, that can get the whole case tossed on appeal because you're projecting to the potential jury, which in a military case is other officers in the military, what you think the verdict should be. When you're the governor of the state and you take an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States, which, by the way, includes the presumption of innocence and the right to a fair trial, and you're prejudging guilt or innocence, you're doing violence to that oath. But I want to touch briefly, Brian, if I can, on, you know, a little bit in that clip you played, because the irony here, you could cut through it with a knife. You know, Governor Hochul is saying that she's concerned about comforting the mother with a baby in a stroller, the senior citizen on the train, and the high school student, you know, taking the subway to school. Each of those individuals in those categories were in fact on the subway car, and those are the individuals that testified in the grand jury that how absolutely terrorized they were for themselves. In the case of the mother, her children, the witness in this case talks about using her baby's stroller as a barricade to protect her child because she was so afraid that Jordan Neely was about to do harm to her and her child. So, you know, I mean, the irony is, like I said, it's thick.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. And how he's not looked at as a hero by that governor just shows how twisted everything is. You looked at that video and you can't be horrified. Jordan Neely didn't deserve that for just riding, being a passenger on a train, not acknowledging that he was harassing, and almost all your witnesses that you've lined up apparently have admitted they felt threatened. What could you tell me about Jordan Neely's background?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll just say that it went far beyond harassment. We have multiple witnesses that were on that subway car that have testified under oath, and this is in our motions, which are part of the public record, that they thought they were going to die, plain and simple, quote end quote, because Jordan Neely was so threatening, so demonic, to use another word that one of the witnesses testified to. So it's far beyond harassment. Look, I'm not here to, you know, this case doesn't hinge on us disparaging Jordan Neely. You know, the loss of human life is tragic. There may be another tragedy that, you know, the system did not reach him despite his, you know, absolutely prolific criminal record, violent criminal record, and history of, you know, pronounced mental illness. So this is tragic on many, many levels, but what is not in dispute is the terror that Jordan Neely introduced into the subway car that afternoon when my client stepped up again to protect himself and his fellow subway riders. The underlying causes, the root causes, as we progressives like to talk about, we can debate those all day long. What is not debatable is the facts that existed on the subway car that afternoon when Danny Penny, my client,
was there. Absolutely. And we've all seen the video, and we all see the fact that he did not run. He said there, took every single question, knew exactly where to find him. He's got this impeccable record. He's already served the country. And he wanted to be a student to go downtown and go to class. He did not get up in the morning and say, let me try to get somebody in a headlock. But, Tom, let me ask you in the bigger picture, what was in his toxicology report? What was in his blood, Jordan Neely?
Well, what I would say is, it is documented, all right, documented evidence that Jordan Neely had a pronounced drug problem, that he was a user of synthetic cannabinoids, which, you know, I've heard some people out there make the comparison, well, you know, he used marijuana, so what? Okay, synthetic K2, synthetic cannabinoids, it's not marijuana, right? It is a ever-evolving mix of chemicals that are thrown together and sprayed on something that looks like vegetation to try to evade the drug laws, and say, well, you know, it's not a Schedule II substance because it's not this. And the reality is that there are, you know, cases throughout the country of people just, you know, dying on this stuff, causing harm to others, taking life.
Yep.
You know, so it's history. And, you know, certainly lab reports and tested his blood that was in fact in his system. So again, that's something else that's not in dispute in this case. And you know how that's going to play out at trial. I think that we'll wait and see. But we're quite confident that the drugs that were in his system contributed to these events in a variety of ways.
And a grand jury did vote to indict, so we have to make sure Danny Penny's off the street so we all feel safe. That's the motivation with this ridiculous Department of Justice here in New York City, who's now going to focus on Donald Trump over the next few weeks, not the Venezuelan drug lords who are living for free, getting turned down service at various hotels while beating up cops on the streets, two of which will be at the State of the Union today. So what is Danny Penny's legal schedule on? When's he due back in court?
Well, we have a court appearance coming up later this month. I think it's mostly just going to be talking about some pretrial issues and scheduling. There is no trial date as of yet, but as of latest estimates, we're estimating that has to go to trial, which unfortunately in May, probably sometime in the early fall.
Unbelievable. And I just wanted you to hear her talk more about the crackdown on crime in New York City. Cut 36.
But all I know is my job is to protect the people of this state, and I'll do it. And I'm also going to demonstrate that Democrats fight crime as well. So this narrative that Republicans have said and hijacked the story that we're soft on crime, that we defund the police. No, we care about civil liberties. We don't want over policing. We want to make sure the police operate within certain restraints, protect our citizens' rights. But by God, I'm going to protect their lives and protect their sense of safety and security here in the city of New York.
I don't see any action to back that up. And that's why there are 6,000 cops down and can't fill up an academy class, because most cops, Tom, do not think that they're backed by this city or this state. Your thoughts?
Well, look, Brian, I ran for Manhattan District Attorney against Alvin Bragg in 2021. My views on all this, I think, are, well documented. Not many people wanted to pay attention when I was running for district attorney, but you can go back and see where I stand. What I would say is I've been, myself, Stephen Razor, our entire legal team has been fastidious about keeping this case non-political. It's not political. There's nothing political about this case. There's nothing political about my client either. But as a concerned New Yorker, someone who rides the subway virtually every day, I hope she means it. That's all I'll say. I hope, Governor Hochul and everyone else that has the ability to deal with the crisis on our subways and in our streets. It is not fudge statistics. It's real.
But Tom, how much harder is it to put a criminal behind bars with this bail reform bill that has now been in law since 2019? Probably the most egregious example is now on the cover of Newsday today, which is a New York newspaper. And as the four people who were found with hacksaws who chopped up a body and spread all these body parts throughout the park of two individuals and were let out with ankle bracelets while their case will be deliberated without bail.
Well, it's nuts, and it hits close to home for us, right, Brian? Because we're both
miles from our house.
Massapequa guys, right? Once a chief, always a chief, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And look, and I know Ray Tierney personally. I campaigned with Ray Tierney. He's the district attorney of Suffolk County. He broke the Gilgo Beach serial killer case, as we all know. And he's just a great, great crime fighter. He's the guy you want as your district attorney if you care about safety. But, the best prosecutor in the world can only work with the law the legislature gives them, right? We all learned in eighth grade about separation of powers, right? It's a real thing. So by divesting not only prosecutors, from the ability to request bail in these situations, but divesting the judiciary of the ability to set bail, the legislature in Albany has, put their thumb on the scales of justice, and the same people that say they care about public safety and so forth are, the ones who pass this thing. I've been a criminal defense attorney. I'm a former prosecutor, but a criminal defense attorney for most of my career. I believe in the presumption of innocence. I believe in fair bail. I don't think that the bail system should be used just to throw someone in jail because they committed, let's say, a low-level offense, or they're not a threat to the community. But totally divesting judges of discretion to set bail in a whole slew of cases, it's in my opinion crazy, and in my opinion, has contributed to what. We see it manifesting itself on the subways, on the streets, in cases like this one out on Long Island all the time.
Yeah, let's hope people understand. We had 4 years to get a look at what lawlessness looks like and how to vilify cops, and hope we never were for that. Hope people realize the folly in that, because we've seen the results. And now they want to just adopt somebody else's talking points. Thomas Kniff, thanks so much. Good luck with your client, Danny Penny.
Great being here, Brian. Thanks for the time.
You got it. Listen, I have some time when we get back. Brian Kilmeade Show. We'll be following everything that's breaking throughout the day. We're also trying to wait on a verdict that could be coming out of the Georgia case on whether this Fonnie Willis and that ridiculous lawyer, Nathan Wade, will be tossed out of the law, practicing law, and off the case against President Trump. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show, hours from the State of the Union.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All Americans, not only in the states most heavily affected, but in every place in this country, are rightly disturbed by the large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country. We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws. It is wrong and ultimately self-defeating for a nation of immigrants to permit the kind of abuse of our immigration laws we have seen in recent years, and we must do more to stop it.
Is that unbelievable? That was Bill Clinton, by report to Democrat. He got the deficit down to zero, which is a credit to him because he had to work with Newt Gingrich to do it. It's a credit to the Republicans. And he was talking about building walls and cracking down on illegal immigration. Do you believe that? You know who used to talk about that too? Harry Reid. You know who else used to talk about that? Chuck Schumer. For some reason, there was some secret meeting along the way, and people thought it would be great to open up our borders and tell somebody they're anti-Hispanic or they don't like immigrants, xenophobic, I think the word is, if you say, I think we should crack down on that. Now it's at the point where things have gotten so bad, I actually believe they're going to get better. I thoroughly believe they're going to get better. Let's go to the phones. David, you're in Virginia. Hey, David. David, what's on your mind?
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I spoke to you last Monday, and I completely fumbled my message. I will see you at Politics and Pints.
Fantastic. In Richmond.
Yes, down in Hopewell, Virginia.
March 20th.
That's correct. March 20th. I'll be there.
What's on your
interview with Christy? The interview with Christy Noem was a great interview. She's obviously a very talented, very gifted person. It was great to hear her talk about TikTok and its influences in our country. They're just creating chaos. We need to get TikTok out of our country.
David, what the most sinister thing is? I think it's the news feed, because the news feed is not going to be subtle. China's great. America's terrible. It'll just be subtle stories about us. They're also playing to the divisions in America that might be there on race, on this trans, on this push on trans, on the blacks, whites, rural, urban, suburban women against Republicans. They're playing this. They're playing us. And at the very, I don't mind a random news feed, but why would we ever let ByteDance, a Chinese company, run the number one social media outlet? Why? Because that's where the young people are right now. Why is Joe Biden banning it from his staff on federal devices? But why does he have a site for his campaign there? Why does he have a TikTok account? Why do so many Republicans and Democrats refuse to vote against it? Why do they vote against the ban? The lobby is so strong, the influence is so great, and the one time people will come up to me and talk news that don't normally do, let's say the 20-somethings, they'll come up to me and they'll just say, you guys going to ban TikTok? Is it? Is Washington going to ban TikTok? That's what gets their attention. And everyone's afraid of losing the 18 to 34 by banning their outlet. Well, show some leadership.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, where I just found out we got National Guardsmen going to go down and start guarding the subways. Take your time, guys. Crime's only been running rampant for the last, 6 years since bail reform kicked in. And we're watching multiple incidents happen. Now we have conductors who lean their heads out getting slashed. We have another woman that just went out, took one step out of her conductor capsule and was attacked. Thankfully, a passenger helped her out. Overall, subway crime up 20%. But now we're getting National Guardsmen, who, by the way, can't arrest anybody. This hour, we're going to be joined by Eli Lake, and we're going to be joined by Garrett Ventry. And Garrett's going to bring us inside the Republican Party and find out the strategy going forward for the Democrats as Joe Biden queues up his State of the Union. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I can show you all the statistics in the world that say you should feel safe because the numbers are better, but you're the mom on the subway with your baby in a stroller. If you're anxious that I'm the governor of the state of New York, I'm concerned about it. And if you feel better walking past someone in a uniform to make sure that someone doesn't bring a knife or a gun on the subway, then that's exactly why I did it.
Right. Yeah, you mental patient. There's nothing wrong, but we'll pretend as if there is. 180 on crime. Blue cities are now embracing conservative anti-crime measures. Why? Let's see.
Number two.
You will hear the president lay out the historic achievements he has delivered. He's got more done in the first 3 years than most presidents have accomplished in two terms.
I know you think that. State of the Union, perhaps Biden's last State of the Union ever. The stakes are high and advice from all sides are pouring in. Also, the real-time rebuttal on Truth Social from President Trump and Katie Britt. We'll have the official rebuttal right after.
Number one.
He's shown he can be magnanimous. He's got a sense of humor. He's got to end the ad hominem. He's now our last chance to save the country. And he's got an obligation to all of us. And he has the ability to seek unity. I think he should even call up Nikki Haley.
Rematch is set. Donald Trump v. Biden. Trump needs money, Biden popularity, energy, and a good story to tell the people that they will believe. We're going to look at the plans, the strategy, and the stakes. Joining us now is Garrett Ventry. Garrett, welcome back.
Hey, Brian. It's great to be with you, as always.
You are the founder and president of GRV Strategies, former senior advisor to Senator Chuck Grassley. So, Garrett, it looks like yesterday Mitch McConnell was the biggest surprise to me. I thought he might put out a statement. I thought he might say, I support the nominee and not use his name because of the way President Trump and he has gone at it, even against with Elaine Chao, his wife. But here it is. Cut two.
How do you reconcile your Trump endorsement with the fact that you called him practically and morally responsible for January 6th and the fact that he insulted you and your wife repeatedly?
On February the 25th, 2021, shortly after the attack on the Capitol, I was asked a similar question, and I said I would support the nominee for president even if it were the former president. And he obviously is going to be the nominee of our party.
All right, he's in. Joni Ernst is in. Governor Youngkin's in. What do you think? Is the party united?
Absolutely, Brian, and thanks for having me on again. I always enjoyed speaking with you. Yeah, I mean, the party is uniting around President Trump here. It's not that surprising. I was actually with Senator McConnell for about 20 minutes yesterday, meeting with him with a Senate candidate, and this is one of the things that came up. You got to remember, I mean, if you take a step back here, Senator McConnell and President Trump, even though they've had their disagreements, they got a lot accomplished. You're talking about they cut taxes. They confirmed 3 Supreme Court justices. They confirmed 54 circuit court judges, which really reshaped the federal judiciary here. And they cut back on a lot of regulations that really let the economy thrive. So they have a lot more in common than he does with Joe Biden. This is not that out of the ordinary here. You got to remember, Kamala Harris, Joe Biden's VP during the Democrat debate in 2020, accused him of being racist over the busing incidents. And so that's something that, you know, people do come together after harsh comments. And Republicans, whether it's Senator McConnell, Glenn Youngkin, all of them are lining up behind President Trump because he's going to be the nominee. He's the leader of the party, and we need to defeat Joe Biden and flip the Senate come November.
Right. It's just interesting because Joe Biden said behind the scenes he's cursing about Donald Trump. He's all angry at congressional Republicans, and they want to see that fire. Netanyahu, he's obviously, and Vladimir Putin, he calls him a thug. They say they want to see that front and center. Will that help?
I mean, he could try and do that. The problem is, you know, tough rhetoric's one thing, but he's been the weakest president of all time. He could say Putin's a thug, but Putin's in Ukraine, didn't invade Ukraine under President Trump. The border's wide open. You know, there's been 9 million people that have come here illegally under Joe Biden in record numbers. You have migrants literally in sanctuary cities being released and killing young women who are running. So this is Joe Biden's America right now. He can talk all the strong rhetoric he wants. We have a weak economy. We still have high inflation. We have high gas prices. Again, we have an open border, and the world is on fire. Again, Russia invading Ukraine. Afghanistan was toppled by the Taliban. Israel was attacked by Hamas in a brutal terrorist attack. All of this is happening because Joe Biden is a weak president, and everyone knows it.
So Victor Davis Hanson, I know you respect him, military historian, historian overall, professor, best-selling author. This is the advice he gave Trump yesterday, cut seven.
He's shown he can be magnanimous. He's got a sense of humor. He's got to end the ad hominem. He's now our last chance to save the country. And he's got an obligation to all of us. And he has the ability to seek unity. I think he should even call up Nikki Haley and say, you know what, we've had problems, but we're going to need you. He needs those votes. I know it doesn't make good politics, but he's got to campaign in 50 states. He's got to go into the inner city. He's got to go to Mexican-American communities. He's got to everybody. And I think he will do very well if he does that. And he's a different character, a different stature in 2016 and 2020.
How much of that do you agree with? And would you do the 50 state strategy? Is that possible in 8 months?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. I mean, I think, you know, Brian, you've interviewed President Trump. You've interacted with him. He does have a very good sense of humor. He's a funny guy. And so I do think if you take a step back here, he is doing a really good job appealing to the kind of voters that Nikki Haley did attract and the voters in the Democrat coalition. If you look at the recent New York Times poll, he's at 23% with African-American voters. That would be a historic landslide for a Republican. And he's almost at 50% with Hispanic voters. So Joe Biden's coalition is deteriorating, and Trump is peeling those voters away. If you look at your Fox News poll that came out over the weekend, he's up there as well. And he's up in a recent NBC poll. So everything looks good for President Trump right now. The reason why is this is a binary choice now. You have Joe Biden and you have Donald Trump. And Brian, you know this, covering this for many years now. Elections come down to contrast. Were you better off than you were 3 or 4 years ago? And the resounding answer is 75% of voters in poll after poll say, we think the country's heading in the wrong direction, and Joe Biden's to blame. And his policies in your Fox News poll say, people say they harmed him, and they think that President Trump's policies helped them. So that's what this election is going to come down to with independent voters. They know President Trump's rhetoric. Everybody knows that. They know Joe Biden's policies. And they know Trump's policies, and they think they helped them. And so I think Trump has the edge here with these voters.
I haven't done the math. You probably know this stuff, Garrett, because this is what you do. But we have this power ranking thing at Fox. And right now, the power rankings, first time since the matchup has been set, has Trump up. You need 271 electoral votes. It has Trump with 251 and Biden with 241. However, when it comes to lawfare, there's some warning signs. Has Trump committed serious crimes? We asked in that poll. 53% say yes, 36% say no. If convicted, who do you vote for? 48-44 Biden. What do you do with if those stats are close to reality, which I think polls are close, maybe closer or a little bit further away. Let's say you're dealing with that and that shows up on your desk and you're working with the Trump campaign. What do you do?
Well, I think first off, I mean, it's absolutely remarkable that you could have someone who's indicted four times and have 91 counts and he's within the margin of error in a poll. That just shows how weak Joe Biden is here. I think the lawfare stuff, a lot of it is baked in. It's really hard to know until we actually see a conviction and, you know, what case he's convicted into if that were to happen. I think his team is doing a good job. You know, you've had a win, obviously, on the ballot measure at the Supreme Court. 9-0, I think the immunity case, a lot of people will be surprised on that, and that could keep continuing to kick some of these down the road. But I think at the end of the day, most voters are pretty smart here, that even if they didn't like what President Trump did with the documents case or another thing, they see a lot of this as baked in and political here as well, and that it's a margin of error race. And your poll and the Journal poll and the New York Times poll, it is still a dead heat race, even with the conviction. That just goes to show how weak of a president Joe Biden is. And even with all of the lawfare surrounding President Trump, if a conviction were to happen, he's still in a position to be able to win the White House.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You can no longer say he's unelectable. You can win the nomination, but he can't win the general. Not when these polls trending like they were. So that was the last argument for DeSantis, Haley, Tim Scott, exactly, and others before they bowed out, and Governor Christie, too. So that's the reality we're looking at right now. But now we look at a March 25th New York trial. Then we're looking at an immunity case April 27th. We have Jack Smith saying, I want in July to try him. They come back is we're going to shoot for August. That's where the Trump team came back. And if it goes for August, goes to September, then you wonder, would you ever do a trial this close to an election and stop a nominee from going out and campaigning? I'm not sure the country would tolerate that. This is all unprecedented. Your thoughts?
No, absolutely, Brian. That is an incredible analysis there, when you put it that way, and you line up the cases like that. I think, you remember covering the 2016 cycle, Democrats lost their mind on James Comey, right, for making an announcement on an FBI investigation on Hillary Clinton, right? We were talking, this is times a million, trying to throw the leading Republican nominee, the Republican nominee, in jail maybe 2 months before an election. That would absolutely violate the Department of Justice's rules of code and conduct of not doing these politically charged cases that could interfere in elections so close to election. You're talking about September. Ballots are almost going out here. So I don't think the public would want that. And I think the president's doing a good job and his team's doing a good job on these cases, on the immunity case, on the Jack Smith case. And you know this. They had 2.5 years to bring these charges against President Trump. They waited till he was a declared candidate, surging in the polls. A lot of these cases had problems. The documents case, for example, ends with this. Joe Biden had documents. He kept them in his garage the time he was a senator. He stole them from a SCIF. He wasn't supposed to have them. He had no right to declassify as a senator. They gave him a slap on the wrist and said essentially he's too much of he loses too much of his mind. He's not able to like be mentally competent to even stand trial. That's not someone we can have as president for the next 4 years.
I want you to hear what RFK said, because if he goes libertarian, he'll be on all 50 states, and it'll be one of the most intriguing thing in this election, as if we don't have enough intrigue and unknowns. Cut 13.
Yeah, well, I'm already beating both President Trump and President Biden among independents, which is the largest cohort. Now, independents are now 52% of the American voting public. This is the first election in history where independents have outnumbered Republicans and Democrats. I'm beating both President Biden and President Trump in young people, people under 35, in the battleground states against among all people under 45. I'm tying President Biden with Hispanic voters and beating President Trump by 10 points. All of the only cohort where I'm losing on are baby boomers.
Well, I mean, if some of the polls, he's right in some of the states, but he's going to be a factor. How do you game plan against RFK?
Well, I think RFK here, I think, you know, overall, the analysis we've seen looking at the polling here over the last couple months, he takes more away from Joe Biden than Donald Trump. The issue is, you know, he's been very far to the left on a lot of these issues, whether it's climate change, border. He's been good on a couple issues that Republicans care about, like the vax mandates. But again, I think if you take a step back here, you're looking at this is someone who's been a Democrat his entire career here. He typically pulls more away from that. So if you're President Trump, you just need to tie him to obviously a lot of the crazy left-wing things he said over the years. And it's a clear contrast. He's running against two Democrats. One's just masquerading as a libertarian.
True. But if you get 2 or 3%, man, does that affect the vote? You know, Jill Stein affected the vote, right? Ralph Nader affected the vote for Bush.
Yep.
So this will be a big play.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be a big player, and that's why it's very important for them to define him early on and just ensure, again, you know, you're getting over the voters that you need to get to be able to win this election and tying him, obviously, to the left. Obviously, you know, you even more famously had Ross Perot in the 90s with Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush take away, obviously, a ton of votes that really cost the election for Bush. So I think the Trump team's smart. They see what RFK is doing here, and I think you just have to paint him as a far-left liberal on these things.
How is Senator Grassley?
How's Senator Grassley doing? He's doing great. I saw him yesterday, actually. He said I'm on TV too much, and I need to get off TV, that I don't look that great. I said, that's right. I said, they only have me on when they can't get you on. So hopefully he'll do your show soon. But he's doing great. He's still kicking, running, you know, 6-7 days a week. Him and I were talking about Caitlin Clark, the Iowa basketball player. He said he was excited to see her play at Northern Iowa before she declared for the WNBA draft. So he's doing just great.
Garrett Ventry, thanks so much, Garrett.
Of course, Brian. Good to be with you.
All right, I'll take your calls next. I see you up there from Syracuse, Long Island, and Virginia Beach. We'll get to your calls momentarily. And just a reminder, One Nation, queuing up for a great show this weekend. We have some fantastic guests. Peter Attia is one of them. Guy Benson will do the news duel. We also are going to have John Crist, one of the funniest comedians in the country, selling out huge venues. He's going to be with us, and we got two big lead stories. So don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think he needs to talk to her donors and her supporters and say, if you want to, a year from now, watch Russian tanks rolling through Europe, then endorse Donald Trump and get on that bandwagon. But understand, you're going to wake up one morning and you're going to see horror across Europe, and you're going to have American soldiers, sailors, having to go over there and do something that we could have done with dollars. We're going to have to do with blood. If you want to continue to see the country being divided and unable to govern itself and treat itself well, get on that Trump train.
Really? Okay. So the world is so unified now with Joe Biden. Van Jones feels we have to warn everybody about Donald Trump. Now, there's people that are going to try to impeach him from day one. They're going to try to bring up January 6th from day one, January 6th from day one. He can't control how people are going to act. Donald Trump acted within the laws. I don't love what he did after he lost. Got it. Understood. But Van Jones talking in a hyperbolic way will not convince any Nikki Haley voter to come over. The anti-Trump people, absolutely. The Liz Cheney people, absolutely. They'll come over. But the Nikki Haley people that just like her better and don't like Trump, that's not going to do it. Because it's unreasonable. Donald Trump never said you're going to take Ukraine. In fact, he gave them lethal arms. He doesn't brag about it because he knows talking about intervention with his supporters is not a positive. But he also got involved in Syria. He also got the Kurds, as well as our advisors, to wipe out ISIS. He's also taken out a lot of leaders from al-Baghdadi to Soleimani. The guy's not a pacifist. Mark, you're listening over in Syracuse. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good.
Hey, so I just want to know, you were talking about potential VP picks for Trump earlier.
Yep.
And I just find it kind of hard to believe that no one has even mentioned Winsome Sears. And, you know, I hate to play the Democrats check the box game, but here goes. She's smart. She's a minority. She's a woman. And she can help him in Virginia. So what's not to like?
That's a great – listen, you give yourself credit. No one's avoiding it. I don't think people have thought about it because she's also military, correct? I don't know. Was she born here? Was she born? I don't know if she's an American citizen. I know she's an American citizen. I don't know if she was born here. You do have to be born here in order to be president. And that's why Schwarzenegger never made the next move. Plus, he left with 36% approval rating. Well, listen, I'm very impressed with her. If Governor Youngkin was going to run for president, I knew she was prepared to step up and take over. I'm sure she's going to run afterwards. I know Democrats have their eye on Virginia. It's one term and out. We'll see what happens. Brian Kilmeade, when we come back, we expand the conversation. Eli Lake.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Have seen what is happening in Gaza and have decided that they can no longer remain silent. Over the past few weeks, we've heard a lot about how the president and his administration are concerned and troubled by the Israeli government's actions. We're here to tell him, so are we. And yet, again, once again, we are continuing, though, to veto resolutions at the United Nations for a third time, calling for immediate lasting ceasefire. We're asking, please, let's go ahead and now prioritize Palestinian lives and, again, saving the lives that are there, many of them women and children.
So that is Congresswoman Tlaib, part of the squad, founding member, AOC, part of the squad, Cori Bush, part of the squad. You know the players. Well, they're out there, and they are no longer bothering Donald Trump. they are really presenting a problem to mainstream Democrats, if you can call President Biden that. And Eli Lake wrote this column, could October 7th bring down the squad? Why? Because their anti-Semitism is showing clear. And in my view, that has no place in this country, no place in this world. And they don't care if everybody sees it, even though they don't claim to be doing that. Eli Lake joins us now. Eli, great to see you.
Great to be back on the show. Thanks for having me.
I should say great to hear from you. But we do our visual medium, by the way. You can see us on Fox Nation. Eli, why do you think this could be the beginning of the end for the squad and people who think like that?
Because even in some of the squad members' own districts, there's been polling that shows that when you ask the question, who do you, you know, who is in the wrong and who's in the right, like the support for Hamas is in the single digits and the support for Israel is significant. It's over around 60%. And that's for specific district polling for Cori Bush and Ilhan Omar. So if Ilhan Omar's own constituency is saying that, you know, it has like a support for Hamas at around a single digits and 60% in this war for Israel, then, you know, one can only imagine the national implications, right? I mean, like, that's a pretty progressive district right there. And, you know, if this becomes the message of the Democratic Party, as opposed to Biden, who I think has been trying to kind of appease, you know, this kind of pro-Gaza crowd in his own party. Well, you know, if Americans think that the Democrats are the party of Tlaib and AOC and Ilhan Omar when it comes to Israel, that's like, you know, they're going to be in a small minority at this point.
I mean,
they're serious challengers to three of the squad members right now, Jamal Bowman, Cori Bush. You know, they are facing real challengers who are well-funded, who are good name recognition, who have, you know, and also in Pennsylvania, Bhavani Patel is taking on Summer Lee, and, you know, she has a real shot. And a lot of people that I talk to who are political pros say those three seats are pretty vulnerable. So for the first time since 2018, Brian, there is you could actually see the results in November where the membership of the squad shrinks. Which would go from 8 to 5 members.
The one who's in the most trouble is Cori Bush, right?
Yeah, I think Cori Bush is in a ton of trouble for a lot of different reasons that are independent of her position on Israel.
Also, she's still anti-cop. She's still for defunding the police. Do you believe this?
It's unbelievable. And she's facing a progressive prosecutor who's also African-American, who's very popular. I think she could really go down. I mean, that's a race to watch at this point.
So you talk about Jamal Bowman, that clown who pulled the fire alarm, who had a cop killer on his bulletin board when he was a teacher in school and yelled at people for condemning. He said, I could put everywhere I wanted on my bulletin board. And now, you know, he was elected in 2020. You say that he's facing a tough race for Georgia County from Westchester County Executive George Latimer. Is that a fellow Democrat?
It's a fellow Democrat. It's a guy who's pretty middle of the road. He reminds me very much of a Clinton Democrat, somebody from the 90s almost. And, you know, he's kind of doing politics the old-fashioned way. He's trying to get endorsements from, like, the local county chairman, Democratic Party chairman, and people like that. On the local level, he's succeeded. He is the first non-incumbent to have gotten an endorsement, I believe, from AIPAC. So we'll see. I mean, he's managed to raise good money. He's like, you know, he's out there. And, you know, the political pros say that he's got, you know, he's somebody who has a good chance of unseating Bowman.
So let's talk about AOC. This was the case when she went to the movies. I'm not for this, but this was the case when she went to the movies with her fiance.
You refused to call it a genocide.
No, I need you to understand.
It's not okay that there's a genocide happening. You're not actively against it.
You're lying.
Do you have any comments?
You're going to cut it, and you're going to cut this, and you're going to clip this so that it's completely out of context. I already said that it was, and y'all are just going to pretend that it wasn't over and over again. It's f***ed up, man. And you're not helping these people,
TV.
And you're not helping them.
So she is she's pro ceasefire. I wouldn't say she's pro Hamas. She realized she's got some Jewish voters. But she is not in the camp. She's not pro-Israel, it's safe to say. And she gets blown up.
Well, I mean, we should say, if you are for an unconditional ceasefire, you are objectively for Hamas, because we know that Hamas violated a ceasefire on October 7th. So the only part, I mean, like, it's you just basically are saying you want Hamas to survive. Now, I think there's fair criticism. I don't agree with it. But if you want to say the price is too high, Israel should do more, there are all kinds of ways that you can critique Israel without falling into this kind of anti-Israel trap. But as soon as you say there has to be an unconditional ceasefire, which is what the squad said within a week, maybe 10 days of October 7th, then you're basically saying that Israel doesn't have a right to defend itself. And that's where they're coming from. And a lot of these progressive grassroots groups, I should say, called Israel, said Israel was committing genocide against the Palestinians before October 7th. They said it in the days after a genocidal act is committed against Jews in Israel. So these people are illiterate. And I mean, to me, what's kind of interesting is that it's such a purity test that even AOC, who says, I called it a genocide, which is ridiculous, you know, she's not pure enough for them. So what I don't understand is why Biden doesn't lean into his actual policy. He has armed the Israelis. He's vetoed unfair UN Security Council resolutions. He sent carrier groups to deter Iran and their proxies like Hezbollah. He is now engaging, although maybe not as effectively as I think we would like, the Houthi pirates and various, you know, terrorists who are attacking commercial shipping in the Red Sea. He is doing all of these things. Why doesn't he lean in and become his best advocate and tell this fringe, which represents a minority of a minority of Americans, to pound sand? Why does he think he needs them? And that, to me, is like a huge, like, warning sign. The policy has been much better than I expected it to be from Biden since this war broke out. Good for him. But then stop trying to paper it over by giving rhetorical sops to a bunch of mental patients.
Couple
Pardon
of things.
My language.
I do think that there was a good start. But now he's stopping them from taking Rafah. Now he says, I need to see a battle plan that shows the humanitarian corridor. I evidently saw it. He doesn't like it. Okay. Now he's forcing the pause for a ceasefire. The Israelis are not signing off on it. And evidently, all their settlements are back 200. All their citizens are back 200 miles off the northern border because of Hezbollah's rockets. They can't live like that. So he's stopping them from answering those calls.
Hamas is not taking the ceasefire. That's the crazy thing. These negotiations through the Qataris and everybody else, and everybody gets these leaks. I think there's going to be one by Monday. Well, Monday is past, okay, and it didn't happen. And why didn't it happen? Because the Israelis were willing to go pretty far, and the U.S. officials have said that. It's because Hamas likes this. They like dead Palestinians. That's because that's what Hamas likes. And so my thinking on this is like, listen, they've tried. They have done their best. And I understand it is a tragedy. So there are innocent people who are going to get killed in this war, and it's bad. But there's nothing you can really do about it when you have an adversary for Israel that decided to spend the last 17 years building an underground bunker city so they could commit genocidal acts, you know, by infiltrating and raping and mutilating women. I mean, like, what are you going to do with that? And so it would just be nice if Biden could just acknowledge that and say, listen, I understand your heart might be in the right place, but we've tried. Hamas is not interested. So there you go. They want war. They're going to get it.
Eli Lake is our guest, Commentary Magazine. Eli, a couple of things.
Also now at the Free Press. Check
all right.
Out Barry Weiss's media op.
Fantastic. And she's fantastic, too.
Yeah.
So, Eli, when we look at what's happening now, there's two things that are important. Number one, Hamas has said, we're doing it again. We have every intention of attacking again. Number two, they don't want a two-state solution. The Palestinians don't want a two-state solution. This is a joke. It's like, wait a second. The people that were attacked have to submit to letting the group that attacked them live next to them. And the group that attacked them said, we don't want it. We want to wipe them out. But it's Netanyahu's the problem.
It's just... It boggles the mind. I mean, the bottom line is that Hamas has been given every opportunity. They did prisoner exchanges, which is ridiculous. I mean, that to me is offensive because The Palestinians who Hamas wants out of Israeli jails are terrorists who have committed violent crimes. They are not political prisoners, as the left likes to think that they are. They're not. And the people that Hamas has are, you know, toddlers and grandmothers. So it's like, what do you – it's and that the idea that you are going to do, you know, trades for hostages itself is kind of offensive. But Israel was willing to do it, and Hamas still said no. And why did they say no? Because they are fanatic death cults. That's what they are. They like the idea that there is starvation or whatever. They like the misery for the population that they purport to rule. So that, you know, you have to get rid of them. And for the longest time, if we want to be critical of Israel, Israel thought they could live with Hamas on their border, and they just found out on October 7th they can't. And the rest of the world should understand that clearly, instead of trying to come up with various sort of diplomatic niceties to basically allow them to survive, which is sort of what, you know, this entire discussion is. So, I mean, I don't understand where the left is coming from. I don't understand why this is the hill that they want to die on. Because if you think about it like this, Brian, I'm sorry to kind of go on. Don't they care about climate change? Don't they care about, like, trans stuff? I mean, aren't there, like, a million other issues that they could press Biden on? Why is the one issue they want to press him on is that they want to be the apologists for, like, the modern-day Nazis? I do not understand that. You're supposed to be the left. Why are you on the side of the fascists?
How about this? How about the organized protesters that even harass Adam Schiff, the president of the United States at his events? Who are these organizations? How are they continue to be funded at 1 o'clock in the afternoon? Why are they stopping cops from doing their jobs on Saturday night in New York City? Who is funding this? There is no Palestinian groundswell. Nobody was talking about the Palestinians like when they were the New England Patriots. Nobody was. You might have a soft heart for that. Where did this organization come from, this anti-Semitism? It's crop up on all these elite campuses.
Well, can I just say, on the Adam Schiff thing, when I saw that, I thought of the Iran-Iraq war. May both sides lose. Because Adam Schiff is the poster boy for lying, okay? And it's like, I don't have any faith in the voters of California, but please, please, please consider Steve Garvey. He's like, what, a seven-time All-Star?
Yes.
He won, you know, like, you know, he's a Hall of Famer.
He'll wear eye black in the office. He's got to work harder. That's my problem. He evidently doesn't do any events. Eli, finally, I want you to hear what John Kerry wants to focus on when it comes to Russia-Ukraine.
Oh, my.
This is cut 14.
We need every country, including Russia. Russia is one of the largest emitters in the world. If Russia wanted to show good faith, they could go out and announce what their reductions are going to be and make a greater effort to reduce emissions now. And maybe that would open up the door for people to feel better about what Russia is choosing to do at this point in time.
That's great advice, isn't it? How many more years of
talking about climate change?
Yes!
So if there were solar-powered tanks, then it would be better?
Yes!
These are not serious people. And it's like, what are we doing? Come on. I agree. It's good to come to sustainable energy. That's nice, and I understand that that's your big passion. But to make this argument, like, why are they not making a good faith effort? Russia's a rogue state. They hate us. They just invaded Ukraine. There are bigger problems right now.
They're stealing children from parents.
Yes, exactly. And
this was the Secretary of State. He was almost president. It is insane. But, Eli, I'm sorry to get you so angry. It's good to hear a guest get more angry than I am. It makes me feel better. I have to be the level head now between us.
Well, this was like therapy. All right.
You owe me. There is no copay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Eli Lake, now with Free Press, too. Back in a moment.
On the road to 2024.
They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. There's never been anything so conclusive.
Trump is the presumptive nominee.
Rematch 2024 is on Trump.
Oh, it's all going to work out. We're going to come out so good. I'm more popular than I ever was.
Biden.
Democracy
24. Right here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
When Donald Trump compares his plight with that of the black person,
That is what I had a problem with. Now, I do want to say this. I want to make it perfectly clear. If you're a black person and you're wearing a Donald Trump mugshot, you are a freaking idiot. And I'm only saying freaking idiot because they won't let me say what I really want to say. But you can figure it out. It starts with an F. I'm not going to go around punching people.
Yeah, that's what
that violence is never the answer.
Exactly.
But my message is very clear. If you think Donald Trump is under the same umbrella as black people, you're just stupid.
All right. That has caused quite an uproar. He's still trending. He's been trending for 2 days now. He's repeated it, I guess, last night on his show. That's not getting the ratings. I mean, they're paying these guys a zillion dollars.
The King Charles.
Unbelievable. But he's saying that why are you making these blanket statements? Does he understand that there's a lot of black people that do see eye to eye with that? And that's been said in the black community, and he repeated it. Not many people repeat it, but not many people like Donald Trump, that they say, wait a second, I don't feel like this guy's getting a fair shot. A lot of people in the black community feel as though when it comes to the courts, they're not getting a fair shot. Did I give judgment? No. So they said they see eye to eye on that. And they said, this is ridiculous. And they're trying to take his money away. So the whole not getting a fair shot thing lines up with a lot of what we heard in 2020. I believe that you remember that, especially in sports. I believe that he underlined that. So Donald Trump embraced it. He said, I'm going to sell my mugshot on a mug. I am going to sell my mugshot on a shirt. I am going to sell it on a card. And I'm going to cut up little pieces of my suit and give you the suit I was wearing when I got the mugshot in Atlanta, which I find one of the funniest, craziest things I've ever heard.
It was smart. But then in addition, then doing the sneakers was another part that Barkley
right.
would
have. I don't get the sneakers. Like, he just thought he could design a sneaker that people wanted. Is this just like an entrepreneurial effort?
Well, I mean, like, he wasn't wrong. A lot of people bought them for a lot of money.
Right. And now they said the only thing he did bet, he should have charged more.
I know they're, what, $3.99?
Yeah.
It should have been more. $300.99. Yeah.
I think it's crazy. By the way, don't forget One Nation, Saturday night, 9 o'clock Eastern time. Great roster of guests, including Peter Attia. You will love what he has to say about lengthening your life. Also, we're going to have John Crist on and so much more. And don't forget, April 27th, Henderson, Nevada, BrianKilmeade.com.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.